Power Play. Here's your host, C. Williams.
Let's get it cracking. 4 o'clock, standing tall, feeling good. Happy holidays out there to you and yours. I'm Seed Williams in the box. Magnums, he's in. He's got the ones and twos. Boy, we're going to have a lot of fun today. Plenty to get to, a switcheroo-ski. Kind of turned the show around doing some different things. Going to go local for a change, being the holiday season and all that. Well, we'll start with what happened over at the MGM Grand Wilder, Ruiz 2. I got lucky on that fight. I actually had under 7 full rounds, and in the 7th round, he knocks him out and retains the title. So there's your starter. Staying with local, the breaking news. Mags, how are you, first of all?
I'm good, man. It's good to be in here. First time in a while. I know I was in, early September, maybe. But, yeah, good to be back with you. And, man, long time we've been doing radio together.
It's been forever. You were here how long ago? And then you left and came back.
Yeah, I was gone, or I was here. I think I started in 04.
And left for in about what? How many years?
Like 5 or 6.
Came back. In the box.
I'm out 4 years here again. Second go round.
There you
go. It's crazy, man.
My second go round too. A different kind of situation. I'm a partner after getting hacked, whacked, snuffed, seen the door, fired. Use your own term or verb. But things are kind of fun. You know, this time of year, it's good to just lay back and have a good time with the mics open. So let's get started with the breaking news. Not really that new or anything we didn't know was going to happen. And Tony Sanchez and his final game will be at Reno this coming Saturday. And they'll love to keep that cannon painted red. The Rebels in that ballgame are a slight underdog. We'll get to all that information. But his information was handed down to him and everyone else across the country that he's done at the end of the season. We knew it. He was a lame duck coach. If he didn't get to 6 and qualify for a bowl game, 19-40, not a very good record if you're a head coach in a D1 program. And so UNLV saying they're going for a national search to get the next head coach. And, wow, you know, for me, the one thing that I feel bad for Tony Sanchez is that he's not going to be here for at least 1 year of that stadium. And I know what they're doing. They're trying to get things started over, clean house, new recruits. That stadium's going to be a marvel for getting kids to come here and play at UNLV. You're going to play in the Raider Stadium, and it's better. Let's face it. It's not on campus like a lot of colleges, but what would you rather have? A brand-new, state-of-the-art, billion-four stadium or something down the road. I'll take the stadium.
Yeah, I think, for UNLV, it's a lot closer, too, because obviously Sam Boyd Stadium is a trek from campus.
It's another city.
Yeah, exactly. It's in Henderson, right? It's not even in Vegas. So they get the shiny new toy, much closer to campus, right? I mean, you're not going to be able to walk, but, I mean, you can't beat it, right?
I agree.
I saw that San Diego State was getting a new one, and again, I don't think that's on campus either.
Have you seen the new stadium lately? When's the last time you passed by there?
Was it Saturday?
Okay, so you've seen. I rolled coming back west, or coming down the strip. Yeah, that would be west. And when you, it is awesome.
Oh man, dude, now that they put the glass up around it, it look, and it's. You know what's crazy? I was driving down Durango the other day. And in between, like, Durango and DI and Spring Mountain and Flamingo, you could see it.
Right.
And, you know, it's like you could see T-Mobile, you could see the stadium, and it's like Vegas has a major league feel.
We're
now.
We're big boys now.
Right? Like, you go to any major city, you know where their football stadium is. You see it from all over. And, like, it was really that first moment where I'm like, you know what? I mean, yeah, we've had the Knights for 3 years, and they've been our team for 3 years, but now we've got NFL.
Yep.
And the thing is, you see it, you're just like, wow.
Coming up 15 or coming down 15, if you're passing by it, it's incredible. Every city that's a big boy city, yeah, they got the big stadium. We have ours now, too. So the Rebels right now in this situation still struggling, 3-8, and hopefully they get the cannon and beat Reno, and that would be a nice closure to Tony Sanchez's career as head coach at UNLV. Running Rebel basketball team not doing so well either. And, you know, let's face it, their losses are to Blue Bloods. I mean, they almost had Cal. They lost to Kansas State, UCLA, SMU, who was ranked. That was 72-68. They hung with them. But you can't lose to Texas State, okay? you're scoring 57 points there. You just can't let that happen. They get Jackson State tomorrow night. But in the end, I'm looking at some of the highlights. And do they have 5,000 people there now? And is the student body still showing up? It's sad, unfortunately. So you're talking about two programs at UNLV, the football and basketball, the two majors, having issues in attendance and also getting W's. They're not pulling the dubs in like they want to. And then you're closer to this than I am. The Vegas Golden Knights, they've struggled. They've lost 7 of 9. They're 11-10-4. On the road, they're 500 as well. And they're an underdog. I'm at the book this morning. They're at Dallas. They're minus -140 is Dallas, plus +115 take back.
Yeah, Dallas, I think. Well, Dallas is good. But it's a really, really tough game for the Golden Knights. I mean, they were Saturday night, they were outplayed in every facet by a team that just looked like they wanted it a lot more. And, you know, I think when you start getting into teams that want it more than you on your home ice, that's a pretty scary thing.
That's real scary. And listen, what do you see? You're there. You're watching them. You're closer to it than I am. I watch them on TV generally when I'm having action on the games I'll be watching. And I've been betting the totals, and they haven't been going over. But at the same time, they've been losing. So what do you see? Let me tell you what I'm hearing. I'm hearing different things. I heard coming in on someone else's radio program, well, what it is they need to change the guaranteed contracts because they got their money and now they're not giving effort. Well, that's every team across the board, okay? It's not just going to settle in with Vegas. I'm hearing, they shouldn't have went to the Cup the first year because now they'll never get there again. What do you see? What do you feel in reality regarding the Knights and their struggles? Remember, they started slowly last year.
Yeah, a little bit different situation because obviously Nate Schmidt was suspended for the first 20 games last year. But what I'm seeing is I see a team that doesn't play with urgency. They get lackadaisical at times. They take shifts off. They take some plays off. Sometimes they take whole periods off. I think they're an average team. I don't see... Now, on paper, they're much better than average team on paper. But from what I see, they look like an average team. I mean, they don't... Nobody's afraid of them. And I think that's a pretty big thing, right? Year one, people were afraid to come into this building. People were afraid to play them because they were blowing teams out. They were so fast. Everyone was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe how good this team is. They've regressed quite a bit. And they're not getting production out of guys they need production out of. Jonathan Marchessault is kind of having a really rough first month and a half of his season. I think Mark Stone has moments where he looks like an elite player, and then he disappears in spurts. I mean, I said to someone earlier today, if not for Marc-Andre Fleury, they're probably in last place right now.
Wow. They've had good goalie keep on both ends. They're the backup as well. And look, we've played a quarter of the season already. I mean, it's a fourth of the season gone by. They're at 500, basically, and in the middle of the pack in the Pacific West. We'll see. And I don't know if that switch could be turned on in hockey like it can in other sports and basketball when you're 5-on-5, your best five against their best five, you could turn it up. Different in football, injuries getting away, but hockey is a different story. We'll see what happens. We root for them. They're our team. They're Vegas-born. Go Knights, go. Now, Gang Green, baby, huh? Setting an ambush for the Raiders coming into New York. What was that all about, a 34-3 victory over the Raiders? And everyone was hyping them up. Hey, we're getting ready for the showdown against Kansas City next week. Going to be dead even in first place. And Donald looked good.
Yeah, you know, I had a feeling it was going to be a trap game for the Raiders. I just saw it, you know, and there was something about it where I'm like, this doesn't look like a game that the Raiders are going to win. I didn't like the fact that the Raiders had come off three big wins. They had traveled so much, you know, that stretch where they were on the road for it seemed like 2 months. And then they got to go to the East Coast. They're playing a team that's been playing better. And Darnold, since he's, I don't really know if he was healthy until maybe a couple of weeks ago, right? Because he had the mono, and from I've never had that, but from what I hear, it just kicks your butt. Like it legitimately just destroys you for a month or two. I think he had it to start the season, which is why he wasn't good against Buffalo. But the last 3 weeks, he's played like the quarterback who played the end of last year. A lot of people don't know, in December last year, he had the highest quarterback rating in the league. And then he comes out this year, high expectations. He looked bad against Buffalo. Then we find out he's got mono. He looked bad against the Patriots both the time, the Monday night game. He didn't look great against Jacksonville or Miami. But, boy, these last three games, he has been on fire. And I see with him, too, he's making better decisions with the ball. I mean, he threw a couple balls out of bounds instead of trying to force him in. The one play he made on the touchdown pass to Griffin, it was just such a well-executed play because the whole Raiders defense went to one side of the field, and then Darnold turned around, and there was Ryan Griffin all alone. I mean, he legitimately walked. You hear, walks into the end zone. Like, Griffin legitimately just walked into the end zone. That's how much space he had. But Jets have a couple games coming up they could win, and all of a sudden, the AFC is so tight. They have an opportunity to be at five straight wins because they play the Bengals next week.
Right.
And then they play the Dolphins at home. I don't know what's after that, but they could, in theory, get to 6-7.
They could get in the mix.
They could be in the mix. I mean, I don't think they're going to make it. I don't think they're going to get there. But I kind of had them around 9-7, 8-8, and I said, look, this is what they're going to be. Of course, Darnold gets mono, but I think without that, they probably beat the Dolphins the first time. They probably beat Jacksonville when they play them. So that could be two wins right there. I mean, they're going to play Buffalo again, but they don't have anyone else. They don't play the Patriots again. So there's a chance for them to win some games and make it interesting and maybe play spoiler.
Yeah, it was kind of nice to see that win 34-3 over the Raiders.
And I had action on it.
Oh, good for you. Darnold going in one direction. The quarterback I'm about to speak of now going in the opposite direction. You're talking about youth and age and aging. And that's Phillip Rivers. He turns 38 in 2 weeks. Okay, he's in the final year of a $83.25 million contract, 11 this year. And this right here was his quote about not having an extension or anything of that nature. Quote, no stress to get a new one done, unquote. Okay, so far this year, 3,169 yards are in a bye week, 15 touchdowns, 14 picks. His QBR is 46, 23rd in the league. Seven picks in the last two games. Now, he's not having fun anymore, and that's just a fact. Keep this in mind. He has nine kids, and let me give you his daily routine when the Chargers practice or are in game week. All right, I did this last year. I went down to the Ravens game in Carson against the Chargers. So I went to San Diego first. So I did the trip to Costa Mesa to get my credential, then on to the stadium in Carson. Here's the deal, all right? That trip is 87 miles one way, it's one hour and 20 minutes, 90 minutes. So you're talking two ways every day to practice. Okay, he's commuting to Costa Mesa, which is right out of LA, and coming back home to San Diego to his family every day for practice. Okay, you've got the kids, they're losing, he's not having fun. I'm predicting right now at the end of the season, Phillip Rivers is going to announce his retirement. What do you think?
I think you might be right. I mean, we watched him on that game last week, and he looked bad. Like, I've always liked Phillip Rivers. I've always felt he was a good quarterback. I always said, look, if he was on the Giants or Steelers, he would have won a Super Bowl, right? Because Eli and Roethlisberger have each won Super Bowls. I felt like, hey, yeah, they've each won two. Yeah. And I feel like Rivers would have won had he been on one of those teams as well. In fact, maybe the Giants have a dynasty with the defense that they had. Because I always felt like Rivers was better than Eli Manning.
I agree.
And I think he just got put in a situation where it's really tough to be successful because I never really felt like there was commitment from the team to be successful. I mean, they wanted to win, but the Giants and Pittsburgh, it's a little more you have to win.
And you think about the coaching. Marty Schottenheimer was the coach back when they had Drew Brees.
Yep.
And moved into Phillip Rivers' era. Okay, Brees was there 2 years, the shoulder moved on. He got his ring. Rivers came in, and then they moved out, and they went to North Turner and kept him, and the Spanos wouldn't move him out.
Mm-hmm.
Great offensive coordinator is North Turner, but he's not a head coach.
Yeah, that was that decision, because when they fired Marty, they went 14-2.
The year they fired him.
The biggest problem is they ran into Tom Brady and Peyton Manning when they were in their primes. But I remember the Chargers used to have Manning's number.
They had all the players, too,
yeah.
from LaDainian Tomlinson.
My favorite player. One of my favorite players
I
ever.
I mean, they had all the receivers. You name it. They had everything except a head coach.
Yeah.
And if they had kept Marty, it would have been different, but unfortunately. And people talk about Cleveland. No, Cleveland has a championship. San Diego has nothing.
Yeah, Cleveland won way back in whatever it was, the 50s or 60s.
But, I mean, in every sport, San Diego has no rings in anything.
Yeah.
Maybe surfing.
Yeah, right. That's a good place to be.
Oh, man. All right, coming up later in the show, Andy Esco, Logical Approach. He's going to take us through the key college games. Also, we're going to, you know, talk some NFL, some key games, and we'll see how far we could get with him because there's so many games to get to, and I want to start with the college games and start with the game tonight in the NFL. From there, we'll work into Week 13, and there's about six, really seven, maybe good games, so we'll get to Andy Esco. But across the street, following the break, Lighters Up, Dope is next.
Man, I've been saving for a special occasion.
Looks like a quarter pounder, man. Let's
blow. Man, be careful with that, man. Is it heavy stuff, man? Will it blow me away?
It's time now for Man, That Show is Dope.
Bo 20 in the Valley. Lighters Up. Pass it. Wow. Holiday season. This dope is going to really trip you out. This 82-year-old powerlifting champion, a woman named Willie Murphy in New York.
Wait, her name is Willie?
Her name is Willie.
It's a woman.
Yeah, I know some ladies named Willie. That's South. That's Southern.
Okay, all right.
Southern women, sisters. Yeah, yeah. This is Nana. Anyway, she is ripped. She's only about 5 feet tall, maybe 4'11", 105 pounds, right? Turn that music up a little bit under me. She can deadlift 225 pounds. 82.
What?
Yeah. She's a former champion. Now,
225 pounds?
Yes, I'm looking at highlights of her. She was on HLN this morning because last Thursday night about 11 o'clock, somebody came knocking on her door. She opens the door up. Dude says, I've been shot. Can you help me? She lets him in, and he tries to rob her.
Oh, no.
So she says she was eating a bag of potato chips. So she went back to the table and picked up this handle that has some steel on it and started beating him. She's beating him, and he's trying to fight, and she's beating him, and she knocks him down and jumps on him and starts stomping him. She says he's calling him all kind of names and just swearing at him, and she's beating the crap out of him, right? And boom, boom, and she says, I had him crying like a little girl. She said, I turned him into a little girl.
Oh.
She said, I could say this because I'm a girl. And she starts flexing while she's doing the interview. So she's beating him down. He's trying to get up. She's holding him down. He can't get up. So she knocks him to the point, and then she calls the cops. Cops come. And she said, when the cops got there, he pretended like nothing happened. But he got arrested. And she just looked at him and said, you ain't nothing but a little girl. To me, 82-year-old Willie Murphy. Dope.
She whooped his ass.
Whooped his ass. Turned him into a little girl.
Wow.
How dope is that?
That's, you know what? If that's your grandma, you ain't messing with Grams.
She's a national powerlifting champion.
Wow.
They show her deadlifting 225 pounds. 105 pounds, and she's only 4'11", 5 feet tall. And if you mess with her, he'll kick your ass.
She's going to whoop it, yeah.
Happy Thanksgiving, buddy.
Wow.
That's nice. That's good stuff, ain't it?
That's crazy.
What you got?
All right, we'll keep it local.
Okay.
We'll go with Liberty High School football team.
I heard the story.
First time in 10 years that Bishop Gorman will not win the state title in football. Why? Because Liberty and Rich Morocco, the head coach over at that school, the Patriots, by the way, not a fan of that. But I like the job that they do. They got the job done on Friday night. Beat Bishop Gorman in the state playoffs. Not even the finals. Like, it wasn't even the state title game.
Right.
Like, Gorman was knocked out. This is only like the second round of the playoffs. Because Liberty plays again this weekend. They're playing, I think, a team from Reno. And then we also have Desert Pines and Centennial who are playing on the other side. So three local teams, one Reno team will be there. But 30-24 in overtime, the Patriots of Liberty, they knock off Bishop Gorman. And, I mean, I don't dislike Gorman, right? It gives opportunity for
but
kids.
But the underdog.
But, yeah, I always root for the underdog. And So first time in 10 years. By the way, Liberty this year, they started 0-5. Well, they played five teams. They played a team from Texas. I think they played a team from two teams from California. They played a team from Hawaii, and then they played a team from Arizona. So 0-5 start to the season. They knock off the 10-time defending state champ Bishop Gorman Gales in OT. They tied it with like 3 minutes to go, forcing into OT. You get a touchdown run, and I watched the video.
Nice.
That place erupted. Those fans. And, you know, I think it's a win for all the public schools in Nevada. Right? Like, Gorman's great. It's fantastic that they've built this powerhouse program. But it's a win for the little guys.
That's gets you hope.
That's a win for Coronado. That's a win for Clark. It's a win for Western. And that's dope.
You get it. They were down 17-3 at halftime. I know the quarterback, Daniel Britty, he 11-play drive to tie it up before they won it. I'm like you. I was following that story. I'm like, you got to be kidding. They beat Gorman?
And good weekend for Liberty because Kenyon Oblad, quarterback of UNLV, a Liberty High School grad. He helped the Rebels close out Sam Boyd Stadium with a W over San Jose State. And I know it's a good feeling
that's
anytime Vegas
dope.
Beats
finish,
San Jose.
Finish through it.
They closed out Sam Boyd Stadium with a W, 38-35. They get a interception on the 5-yard line with 5 seconds to go. And Sparty goes back to San Jose with a big fat L.
That was awesome, too. Listen, 299 games at Sam Boyd Stadium. Final game ever for the Rebels. They have Randall Cunningham,
all the all-time greats. Woods.
This was pretty cool.
Yeah. I think Honky Cooper was there.
Yep. Everybody was there. Everyone showed up. I mean, this is at one time, the last time. And you know, if it's a family. It's a brotherhood when you're in a – it's your own fraternity. You played there. You were a part of this system. You know, I attended UNLV. I didn't play any sports there. But, hey, I bleed that Rebel a scarlet and gray as well. So that's dope all the way around. And so is this, because I'm sick of us humans. As you know, Thanksgiving is coming up in a couple of days. And people know it, and so do the turkeys. Okay? In fact, back in the small senior citizen community in New Jersey.
You know what? That's my hometown.
It's a big payback. Okay? A gang of 60 wild turkeys are terrorizing that community.
Get
this,
them old people
this
out.
This took place last week. Now, get this. They're breaking through windows, pecking cars, blocking traffic, hanging out on rooftops. Unfortunately, a child in a pool got pecked. Okay? One dude had his truck surrounded by a gang of turkeys. He couldn't get out. He's trapped in there for 20 minutes. Turkeys wouldn't let him out of his truck. Turkeys know. All their cousins, aunties, uncles, grandmas, grandpas, nana that we've eaten over the years.
Oh, yeah.
It's the big payback. These ain't no jive turkeys, man. These turkeys be dope.
They ain't messing around. Who'd you like to run into, Willie or a pack of 60 turkeys pecking at you?
I think I'll run into Willie.
Yeah.
I think I've sweet talked her. Look, turkeys, man, they don't play when they're together, even if they're single.
Yeah.
And they say they're the dumbest bird. In other words, if you put one near water, a turkey, if he sees a reflection, he thinks it's another turkey, he'll stick his head in the water and drown and leave it there. But turkeys don't play, man. Imagine getting pecked by a gang of them. 60
might
in your hometown.
You. Yeah, my hometown in New Jersey, yeah.
All right, lighters down. 427 across the street, Andy Isco next here on Power Play.
This is how we do it.
Back on the mean streets of Vegas, 4:30, feeling good here on a Monday. Happy holiday season out there to you and yours. Big football game coming up tonight between the Ravens and the Rams. We'll get to that shortly. Let's bring in now on the phones from Logical Approach, Andy Isco. Andy, happy holidays. How are you, brother?
Gobble, gobble, seat. I'm just glad I'm not in New Jersey.
A gang of turkeys, baby. They payback. Big payback.
I'm waiting for the movie, Revenge of the Wild Turkeys.
It could happen. Let's get started here with college football before we get to tonight's game, and then we'll see how far we get through the NFL because we have a slew of games here. So, Ohio State, Michigan, and this right here is a situation where, hey, let's face it, Jim Harbaugh has a chance to kind of throw a wrench into the plans of the Buckeyes. I don't know if they're good enough to, But the number, I believe, is 9 and 53. Your thoughts here and what you see.
Yeah, I'm actually showing a number of 8.5 starting to pop up. If you like Ohio State right now, you can actually, I see an 8 at, I think it's the South Point. If you like Ohio State, you go there. If you like Michigan, you can still get some 9.5. I see Treasure Island, which is an independent book, has 9.5. So it's actually come down. I forget exactly what the high point was about a month or so ago when Michigan was really struggling. Ohio State was blowing everybody away. I want to say the line was up to about 12.5 or 13, might have even edged above it. I know that as of the other day, I think it was, it may have even been after the results of this past weekend when Michigan won relatively handily at Indiana in what was considered to be a flat spot for them, and Ohio State prevailed over Penn State, despite the fact that Penn State gave them a challenge, although a lot of that challenge had to do with some mistakes. They lost the turnover battle 3-1 to Penn State, losing 3 of 4 fumbles, and they did intercept Penn State one, but it was more of an ordinary performance by Ohio State, their smallest margin of victory of the year of 11 points. Previously, it had been 24 points in their opener against Florida Atlantic. So after that game, the line I saw at a number of places had Ohio State a 10-point favorite. So over the last 24 to 36 hours, let's say, money has come in on Michigan. And you mentioned about Jim Harbaugh, his inability to win the big game, to get by Ohio State. Well, this may be as good a shot as he has. He's had a quarterback who's played, Shea Patterson, who's struggled early in the year, but the Michigan offense was rolling nicely over the latter part of the season. The defense has been pretty solid all year. And Ohio State presents a formidable foe, but, you know, sometimes you got to take a look at it from Ohio State's position as well, and that is, hey, we've got a chance to represent the Big Ten in the national championship playoff, the 4-team playoff. We cannot afford a slip up here. There's no assurance that if Ohio State were to fall to Michigan and then beat, I guess it would be either Minnesota or Wisconsin from the other half of the Big Ten in the Big Ten championship game, that Ohio State, with that one loss to Michigan, would get in the playoffs. So I think Ohio State is every bit as much up for this game as it being a rivalry game against Michigan, but also because of the national implications of what's on the line. And I haven't done anything in this game. I'm looking at the Ohio State side after having been challenged last week. If they had had little difficulty in getting past Penn State, which was a struggling Penn State team the previous 2 weeks after finally losing their first game of the season a couple of weeks ago to Minnesota, and then really very lethargic in last week's win over Indiana. Had Ohio State won impressively, maybe you could make a better case that they might not bring the same intensity, although that's really hard. That's a hard case to make, but the point is, I think right now the line is a little bit less expensive than it was just a few weeks ago. Not all that much has changed as far as Ohio State goes. It's a question of if you believe Michigan is as improved as they appear to be over the last month.
Andy Esco, Logical Approach here on the show, Power Play. I know on the plate there'll be a lot of Jonathan Taylor being served to the Golden Gophers from Wisconsin in this matchup. And this right here is a really good one to watch. Under field goal favorite are the Badgers. Tell us about this matchup and what you see, Andy.
Yeah, I'm just flipping around here on the odd screen because I know we're not going in the order of the schedule rotation, so it's going to take me a little bit here to find the matchup. But certainly, Wisconsin, I think for the most part this season, surprised a lot of people as far as what was expected of them into the, there we go, there are a couple of games after Ohio State, so I guess I was off a little bit there. 2.5, Wisconsin. You know, it's one of those tricky numbers where if you look at the 2.5, you say, gee, why is it less than a field goal? Are they trying to beg you to take Wisconsin and lay under a field goal? At the same time, Minnesota's played exceptionally well all season. I like the way that they rebounded after their loss to Iowa, especially they showed some grit in coming back in the second half after being down at halftime in that game. Yeah, they missed the point spread cover by botching the extra point, but they still would have lost the game by three. Nonetheless, I like what I saw out of Minnesota, the way they got out to an early lead and really took care of Northwestern. Not that taking care of Northwestern is any big feat. Northwestern's had a very disappointing season. But unlike Penn State, who struggled in their following week after their first loss, Minnesota showed a lot of determination in shaking that loss off and saying, hey, we still have a chance to win the Big Ten championship and possibly put their fates into the hands of the committee if they're able to beat, most likely it'll be Ohio State for the Big Ten championship. I'm inclined to monitor this line, look to see if we can get the possible plus three with Minnesota at home on Saturday.
All right, let's scroll down to the playoff for the Cannon. That is now red. Hopefully the Rebels can keep it that way. And Tony Sanchez's last game as they go to Reno, and that's what we call them here. Reno looks like they're about a 7.5-point favorite and 53.5 or so. I think the Rebels win this football game.
You know, I'm surprised you didn't do it the way that Ohio State talks about Michigan, you know, that supposed school up north. But in any event, yeah, this will be the swan song, the final game coached by Tony Sanchez. And really the goal that they have here is to ruin the season for Nevada by winning. Not really ruining the season. Nevada's 7-4. They're going to go to a bowl game, so there's intense motivation for Nevada as well. But to end up winning the Cannon back-to-back years, which would be an impressive feat, it doesn't occur very often, certainly over the last 30 years or so. Nonetheless, I like the way this Nevada team is playing. They went into Fresno State the other day, nearly 14-point underdogs, came away with a hard-fought 35-28 win. And I'm inclined to back the Wolfpack here. The 7.5 seems to be a relatively cheap number when you consider the fortunes of both teams. You know, the Rebels really put it all out on the floor this past Saturday. They wanted to win that final game at Sam Boyd. I think they wanted to certainly give the win for the last home win for Coach Sanchez in what pretty much everybody expected would be indeed his final home game. Yeah, you've got the rivalry, but you wonder emotionally how much the fight against San Jose took out of them. They had what appeared to be a comfortable lead, then they had a fight back from behind. That's an awful lot to now ask them to get up in a very emotional, for what will be an emotional game next week up in Reno, where Reno is thinking about, hey, we want that Cannon back. We don't care about the coaching situation and all that at UNLV. We want that Cannon back. They're playing very well right now. I think we got the expected effort out of the Rebels this past Saturday. I'm not sure that they can duplicate it as far as going up against a rival who's the rivalry probably means more to UNLV because they've been the little brother of the Wolfpack for many years, but I think it's still very important for Nevada in this week. So I'm going to wait and see. Well, I do see a couple of sevens out there right now. So with 7.5s out there, either later tonight or tomorrow morning, I'll go out there and lay the seven.
That'll be high noon, UNLV at Reno. Then the big game that we'll all be watching at 12:30 is the battle down south in the deep, dirty south. Alabama and Auburn, and that's a 12:30 start, as we mentioned. Bama, you know, I'm looking across the board here. I see Bama about 3.5, and there's a 4, but I don't see much on the total. I see 49.50, but not many places have totals posted.
No, a lot of places will put totals up tomorrow. I think Circa may have even posted their totals yesterday when they put the lines up for the games. They've been the first, I think internationally, as a matter of fact, to post college totals out. They've been doing it all season, and it comes out, I think, late morning on Sundays, and I seem to recall the total for most games up there yesterday. 49.5, I do see a 50 out there, even a 50.5 at another offshore place. Certainly, I think the majority of the nation outside of Tuscaloosa are rooting for Auburn to win this game straight up so that the committee has no alternative but to not invite a two-loss Alabama team. I think everyone's worst fear is that Alabama beats Auburn and gets a second SEC invitation into the college football playoff, depending upon who wins between Georgia and LSU. And I think that that's something that very few people, as I say, out of Tuscaloosa want to see. Nonetheless, you have to respect what Alabama has done. Of course, Tua's out now for the duration of the season. His replacement, Mac Jones came in, had a very big game against Arkansas, but that's not saying much. You or I could have had that kind of performance against Arkansas, the way the Razorbacks program has declined over the past two or three years, and they're in the search of for a new coach as well. But even the other day against Western Carolina, 66-3, doesn't tell us all that much. They didn't need to do a lot of passing in that game. In fact, they threw a total of 15 passes in the 66-3 win, completing 12 of them. So it almost doesn't matter that the backup is going. I'd like to make a case for Auburn in this game. They're clearly going to be very motivated. So is Alabama. But there just appears to be too much of a talent gap to believe that Alabama can't win this game by more than 4 points. So not sure if I'm going to play the game, but I would have to back Alabama. As much as I personally also would like to see them lose, I just can't see it, considering the fact that Alabama realized they have no margin for error. We heard, I think I read the comment today that Nick Saban, the coach of Alabama, said, Auburn will be the best team that we've played all year, which is sort of a slight to LSU, but you wouldn't expect him to say anything different because he's got to have his team believing that right. Auburn will be the toughest test that they will have had, even though they already lost to LSU. So I can understand that from, I guess, a motivation standpoint, not that they need motivation. So as much as I would like to see Auburn win, possibly even cover, or vice versa, cover and possibly even win, I just don't see it.
I don't think Nick Saban will ever say it, but his worst fears is playing Auburn at the end of the season. We remember that kickoff return that ended their season a few seasons back. Andy Esco,
absolutely.
Yep, logical approach here on the show, Power Play. Let's go to tonight. Let's talk about the big boys now. Big ball game here. Ravens and the Rams, 8-2 are the Ravens. Rams at 6-4, and they kind of need this game because things are tightening up in that NFC chase and in that division they're in. Obviously, Seattle and the 49ers, those two teams are going to make the playoffs at the pace they're going. The Rams have to try to vie their best to get that other wild card spot. The Ravens, just over a field goal favorite, total under 50. Give us the numbers and your thoughts on this matchup because, you know, we haven't seen anything like this. Lamar Jackson, three tight ends, the way they play that option, sometimes occasionally you see the three Heisman in the backfield. The Rams on the other side, Jared Goff is going to have to keep up offensively with this team, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, you mentioned the key elements surrounding the home underdog Rams in this game, and that is the importance of them. You know, yeah, they've it's not unusual to see the Super Bowl loser hangover, but the Rams have really carried it a lot deeper than other teams have. I mean, you know, you look at them; they're 6-4, and they're a fortunate 6-4. A number of those six wins have not been very pretty, especially when they've gone up against competitive teams on their schedule. There's a split in this game between the wise guys and the public. The public largely on the Baltimore Ravens, even willing to lay that 3.5. Although we're starting to see some threes show up again with minus 20 attached to the Ravens, as I think a lot of the sharper money is taking the 3.5. But I'm not so sure that the sharp money is correct in this game. Baltimore has faced three outstanding teams over the last several weeks: New England, Houston, and the other one escapes me at the moment. But nonetheless, they've dominated. I'm not considering Cincinnati. There was another one before that, but Cincinnati they dominated easily, and they had, you know, you thought they might suffer a letdown after the New England win against Cincinnati. They didn't, and then they followed up that Cincinnati win with that 41-7 win last week over probably playoff-bound Houston. So why would you expect a letdown from them here against a Rams team? you know, people are talking about the Rams and their need to possibly be in the wild card race. Well, keep a look at it from the perspective of the Ravens as well. They have the tiebreaker edge against the New England Patriots for the number one seed in the AFC. However, that tiebreaker does them no good unless they can tie or surpass New England. And right now, they are a game behind the Patriots. So they not only have to keep winning, they have to lose and hope that at some point New England stubs its toe and gets a second loss. If Baltimore were to lose this game tonight and drop to 8-3, it's hard to imagine that New England would lose twice over their final five games and Baltimore would be able to run the table and thus catch New England. So I think a one-game deficit is still manageable. That's quite possible. New England could lose one of their last five. Lose 2 of 5, unlikely. So I think Baltimore, in addition to the fundamental assets that they have, and you're speaking basically about a Lamar Jackson, and a defense that has been amongst the league's best defense over the past 6 or 7 weeks. Their year-long stats don't look very good because they had some ugly stats. What was it? I think the 400 or 500 yards that they allowed in back-to-back games early in the season, those stats are still part of their overall picture. But you go back over the last month and a half to 2 months, and Baltimore's defense has played extremely well. So I did not get involved in this game, but if I'm looking for the range for the Ravens, I don't mind laying 3 -20, which I see available at a couple of local. I see them. Well, actually, I think the one location right now as the screen is dancing is William Hill has 3 -20. The other places in town, Westgate has 3.5 even money, and the other places, I think, Circus even money as well, but the others have 3.5 -05 to -110. So depending upon your opinion, there are places to get the 3 or the 3.5 and lay the 20 with the Rams plus the 3.5, and maybe that hook does come into play.
Yeah, Andy, I did jump in. I took under in the first half, under 23. We'll see how that plays out. Thanksgiving on the table where the turkeys will be dancing, at least back east. Not on my table. They'll be eaten. We'll go to this one particular game where the 8-3 Buffalo Bills, the 8-3 Buffalo Bills, 6-5 Cowboys. And the Cowboys, listen, you talk about the team, probably one of the most talented teams in the league at almost 500. They're a touchdown favorite on Thanksgiving Day and 45 against Buffalo. I think Buffalo has a chance to go in there and make it competitive. If the Cowboys don't control the football and turn it over, the Bills have a chance to win this game outright.
Well, it's interesting. I think a lot of discussions today have been about the poor record that the Cowboys have when going up against winning teams this year. They've not performed very well. In fact, if you look at the games that they've lost this year, they lost to New Orleans, they've lost to Green Bay, they've lost to Minnesota, and their other loss, their fourth loss, was to the Jets, who are playing very well right now, but they're still not a winning team. And I look at their schedule, and they really do not have a win over a team with a winning record. The Giants, Washington, Miami, Philadelphia, the Giants again, Detroit, and of course, yesterday their other loss was at New England. So there's a lot of criticism. They played a very soft schedule, but the same thing can be said about the Buffalo Bills. If you look at who Buffalo has played this year, all their wins. I'm trying to find that. Yeah, Tennessee may be the one winning team that Buffalo has beaten. The wins were against the Jets, the Giants, Cincinnati, Miami, Washington, Miami again, and then yesterday Denver, a losing team. So really Tennessee is the only winning team that Buffalo has beaten. And we heard Jerry Jones uncharacteristically come out with some very harsh comments about the coaching staff. He really seems very furious at the special teams performance yesterday and throughout the course of the season. If you run the numbers, you can probably make a case for Buffalo in this game, but to me this seems like the kind of spot where Dallas just takes out a lot of its its frustrations. They're going up against a very good Buffalo defense, but again, a Buffalo defense that has really not faced very much in the way of outstanding offenses. You could point to their one game against New England where they outgained the Patriots 375 to 224. Patriots won that game 16-10. But when you have to point one game out, that means that it's basically the exception rather than their overall season performance. You know, Buffalo lost badly at home to Philadelphia about a month or so ago. So I'm likely going to be on the Dallas side in this game, thinking that they're going to be extremely aggressive, and I think that that means that you're going to see more of a balanced attack with Zeke running the ball and Prescott passing the ball, challenging that Buffalo defense. But more importantly, I think we're going to see the Dallas defense put an awful lot of pressure on Josh Allen, the Buffalo quarterback, possibly make some mistakes, and hopefully for their sake, try and get Buffalo to play from behind.
That's Andy Esco, Logical Approach, here on the show Power Play. The early game at 9:30, Chicago and Detroit, and also the late game, New Orleans and Atlanta. Let's jump to the following Sunday, Week 13, and we get the Ravens on a short week coming home after tonight, where they're prepping now to battle the Rams as a 3.5-point favorite. They come home against the 49ers, where they're a 4-point favorite against a 10-1 team, the best record in the NFC, the total 46 there. The Niners with the best defense. They allow you 11 points a game. Ravens, as you mentioned, at 8-2. They also have a very good defense, and their offense is something very complex. Here's the thing. When you have tape on something that's new, and the coordinators on defense across the league, they have that on the Ravens from last year. They still haven't been able to figure it out. A wrinkle here, a twist there, and here they are. The Ravens at home against the Niners next Sunday, starting week number 13. Andy, your take.
Yeah, I'm showing basically Baltimore a 4-point favorite to 4.5 at a number of places. Some places have taken the game off pending what happens tonight, and I want to see what happens tonight. Total at the places that have it up currently, and it'll probably again come down at all places tonight during the game, I would think, 46 to 46.5. And the difference between Lamar Jackson last year and Lamar Jackson this year is that he's become a much better thrower of the football. Worked very hard on that during the offseason, and it's been quite evident in his overall play. And Baltimore, here we are 10 games into the season. They are averaging 204 rushing yards per game. Of course, a lot of it has to do with Jackson, but he's gotten support from his running backs as well. It's hard to knock either team. It's hard to play against either team. I think there are going to be a number of people who might play. You can talk about the aspect of San Francisco going across country and playing on the East Coast in an early starting game. Yeah, I'm actually somewhat surprised that maybe they couldn't do it for maybe contractual reasons. I would have thought that this would have been the more attractive primetime game Sunday night. Not that New England and Houston isn't, but I think considering what we've seen out of San Francisco and Baltimore. But nonetheless, teams going to the East Coast don't necessarily fare as poorly as a lot of people think. Some teams have fared well, some teams have fared poorly, but whatever you think of it being a negative for San Francisco having to travel across country and make that early start time, you've also got Baltimore on that one day shorter week by playing tonight. So I think that those two factors, to whatever extent you put weight on those factors, somewhat offset each other. Because Baltimore is able to run the football so well,
Andy,
I might look at their game plan here is to slow the game down. I'm going to look under the total.
Andy, quickly, let the peeps know where they can find you. We got 5 seconds.
TheLogicalApproach.com, and in the pages of Gaming Today, columns on the NFL and NBA.
Happy Thanksgiving. Peace and out.